Ladies and gentlemen, welcome
people here in the room,
welcome people on the phone, and welcome people on the video webcast. Welcome to the Randstad Q2 results presentation. We have the usual setup today. Ben will take us through the highlights of the merger and the key points of the quarter. Since many quarters, a lot of numbers carry minus signs, we call them key points rather than highlights. I wonder if anyone noticed this subtle change in our press release since a few quarters. And after that, Robert Jan will take you through the financials, the outlook, and a few items on tax, our favorite subject. After that, we'll have a Q&A session. And as always, we gently ask you just to refrain yourself to two questions in order to make sure that we can get as many people on the lines. And from here, I'll just give the floor to Ben. Thanks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome, wherever you are. Second quarter of this year, a very interesting quarter, with a very obvious highlight, that is the end of the merger activities with Vedior. We've become one company, we've achieved our targets, actually we achieved our targets a year early. I got the question more often, how is that possible? It's a very simple solution. If you have a merger plan and it'll save you 10 million and the market collapses, you can either make a new plan or you can execute the original plan faster. That's exactly what happened. And the other thing that happened is that we found that if you talk to people in the same business, you speak the same language, and people recognize whatever has a value and what does not have a value. And that's why many companies, even without it having been planned, started to merge and to work the way we found out as being the best possible way forward. The other thing about the quarter is obvious. It's a stable quarter, which is a funny word if you think about minus 31. But this is the first quarter in quite a number of quarters where revenue did not decline during the quarter. It was stable. Although, of course, we did see shifts through the different geographies and the different segments. But we'll try and get back to those earlier. We've also seen the first sign of change in legislation. France opening up the public market, which is, of course, a big opportunity. However, we should not get too excited on the short term because it'll take time to develop that market. So I would not plot in a high sales number for the next quarter. That would be a bit too optimistic. Let's start. The reason, this is about how we compare numbers, slide number three. Where we, of course, took the pro forma results of the second quarter of last year, of the two companies, put them together so you have something to compare it with without having to do too much work on it. The change in legislation, I think, is important. It's also something which is how we sell to our clients nowadays and also do our lobbying. If you look at the slide that says flexibility, better employment for everyone, this is what we sell to clients, and this is how we try and convince and have been convincing governments, the EU, etc., on why agency work is so important. For many of you, it's obvious, but still, we do see that especially now, people associate agency work with easy to fire, which is not what we sell. It is an effect. It's, by the way, also the wrong reaction of a company. If they only fire flex workers, they're going to be inflexible, which means they're going to be inefficient. And we are guilty of the same behavior every now and then. But still, what we sell, obviously, is we sell know-how of our candidates, and we sell efficiency. Efficiency by making sure that a company has the right number and the right quality of people at the right moment in time. By being able to do that, and that's why we have total cost of ownership of labor, that's why we have been successful in in-house services, and that's also what we want to develop in other segments of the market, to grow that much in in-house, obviously. This circle says it all. If you are able to do that, you're going to be more efficient, you're going to be able to compete better, and we're going to have more jobs, because companies are going to be more successful. The State Secretary, is it called like that? I'm not sure. And Holland even stated it. I'm not sure if she meant this, but anyhow, we're going to lobby this until the end. Huh? Looking at the market, the top right corner shows the market development, which, especially if you look on the left side of the graph, where it goes to minus 40, again, is an astonishing number in as far as a market can decline so fast. To highlight the month-on-month development, we also provided you the bottom right graph. We won't do this forever in the future, but now it is very sensitive, so we want to be sure that you see the movements of the markets. And we also realize that behind that you'd like to know the differences between professionals and general staffing. And anyhow, but this is what you see here. And the interesting part is, as I mentioned earlier, that April, May, June is more or less flat at minus 31% on average. And if you look at these markets, they're also flat. The slight uptick in June is happening actually in some markets. It's actually happening on other markets because we have a correction of working days, and a working day correction is always a little bit, let's say, flexible. The translation into literally the same number of working days has an effect that is not exactly the same as the real trend. So you have to be a little bit careful on extrapolating the uptick in June. Still a stable market. We'll get into the main markets in a minute. But as I said, minus 33 overall, minus 31% year on year per working day. We've shared very often our basic scenarios of the past, where change in market started in the US, blue collar, mainly Southeast, Belgium, UK was in between. Those markets we do see improving. Improving means, however, that like in the US, it goes from minus 40 to minus 33. But anyhow, in a relative short period of time, we see quite an uptick. Whereas what we also expect and know, professional market being late cyclical, the professional markets are still declining. And actually, in quite a number of markets, the decline has accelerated from Q1 to Q2. So those are signs. We are still careful in stating that the trend has changed. But anyhow, in order to start to improve, you first need to bottom out. This could be bottoming out, but again, it's too short, 4 months, to make that statement very firmly. Operating expenses, we have reacted as we should have according to our unit steering model. Minus 24% compared to last year, which is a huge amount, of course, coming from over 700 million cost in a quarter to 531, is quite an achievement by our people. They've done excellent in that respect. EBITDA 67 million, obviously. Reorganization is on track, except for France. I'll get back to that when I go through the main markets as usual. And integration finished. A bit more on the integration. This is the slide we shared with you when we actually announced the bid we had for Vedior. The bottom four boxes, tax, head office, branches, and efficiency, were the boxes that justified the bonus we paid, the premium of €1 billion. We actually overachieved here. We started, as you will remember, with 70 million savings, 7-0, in costs and 20 million in taxes. It has now turned out to be, if you look at the run rate now, 96 million annually and 40 million in taxes. So that has been covered excellently. The top bottom boxes are obviously the one where strategically we see opportunities to benefit from being a different, a better company. So we're working on those. What have we achieved? There's one missing here on the head office. Obviously, we closed the holding, Vedior holding office. It was closed 10 days after we had all the shares. In many countries, we have combined head offices, mainly of the general staffing companies. We have our control mechanisms in place based on the best practices of both companies. Which of course is very important and has become more important in the past. If you look at branches, the closings, it's obvious where we had mergers, we could close branches. And we talk about a large number of branches, but also the branches that are still open. Many of them had to be rebranded, obviously. So a huge effort has been put into doing that as fast as it has been done and as efficient as it has been done. Efficiency, rebranding of 106 brands, which is huge. And to be honest, that's a lot faster than I had anticipated. When we looked at the initial plan, I had planned 3 to 5 years to actually achieve, especially on the branding side, what we have achieved so far. So that has gone excellently. On the bottom four boxes, looking at in-house, in France we just started. In other markets we already moved the clients. It's not a large amount yet because, as you know, quite a number of in-house clients had a very low level of activity, so it didn't make sense to invest in changing and adding people. It'll happen when the market picks up and we will move large clients gradually. The RFPs we are involved in, especially internationally, have increased 38%. The success rate has increased slightly, still high. It's well over 70%, which is enormous. Professionals, Australia is an area where people recognized where we're going and why we're doing it. And actually, without it having been planned yet, moved to the Randstad brand, all of them except for one small company where we still have a minority shareholder, moving to one back office, a fantastic development in a very short period of time. We see the first movements in especially the UK professionals market, BBT and Hill McLean, both being in the engineering, the building, merging into one company, also being branded Randstad, by the way. On the other side, the BBT part, that was in healthcare, joint forces with Reliant. It's going to be Randstad Care in the future. A lot of developments that have gone and happened very, very fast. Obviously, this is also an area where the recession helps, because it puts more pressure on reducing costs, being more efficient, and grabbing opportunities. That's what we're doing. We also changed part of the steering model, if you want. Both Hill McLean and BBT had operations abroad, Australia, Canada, and we have been in the process of putting those organizations under the regional management. Specialties, especially in France, we have a successful track record of growing in specialties. The combination with the video visibility to serve as large clients in an excellent and efficient way, with our ability to develop these specialties, is something we are building into the new company as we speak. And then we share, of course, knowledge on contact centers, call centers, which is big. We actually own a few in Portugal, so that we have an even more in-depth knowledge than we had before. And then we have a whole range of other best practices. DSO is the obvious one in these days, where cash is even more king than it used to be. And should lead to an improvement in our DSO. In our building blocks, that hasn't changed. One other thing I'd like to mention, if you look at the new web platform, we have Blue 2, we call it, as a project. It's a new web platform, which we have implemented in 14 countries now, which is really up to date. An excellent example is Australia. They joined the companies. Australia had practically no, large numbers of visitors on their websites. From the moment they turn into Randstad, we are now the second biggest job website in Australia within a couple of months and without a lot of promotion. So those things for sure will help to build a better company in the future. The other things you can read yourself. But main markets, when we started, France was our biggest market, but unfortunately the market there has shown to be a bit more volatile than Holland, so Holland is the biggest market again. We'll find a way to get other big markets. Organic revenue per working day minus 23, which is terrible, but in light of development in other markets is good. Holland has changed into a more late cyclical market, obviously based on the high level of services we have in this market. Randstad the Netherlands improved. They were below market, as I mentioned, a couple of quarters. They're now at market. Temper team above market, that helps. We do see what we expect already, some pressure on gross margin. Robert Jan will get into more detail on what actually causes pressure on gross margin. What I'm referring to here is really price pressure in negotiations. There are more elements that actually, of course, build up to the gross margin. But again, I'd like to make this remark. I'm always very pleased with all the coverage of all of you, but there's every now and then one thing which needs clarification. A change in the average gross margin has nothing to do directly with the profit. As I said very often, if all my sales would be in-house and I would have 16% gross margin, I'd make 7% profit. Please refer to the level below because almost everybody of you does it in a fantastic way, but sometimes it slips through. Gross margin gets translated to profit. 7.2% EBITDA. As usual, I'd say through the crisis, through any crisis, the Netherlands has always been a good profitable market. We sold part of our payroll processing business, as we have explained before. Market is not as attractive as such, which by the way, was also not our plan, but it was even less attractive than we anticipated. Two, we saw this as a stepping stone to companies outsourcing more HR services to us. Didn't happen. It didn't happen anywhere, actually. We have other priorities today. France. We have seen savings there and a reduction in headcount. That reduction is based on a few exceptions, but mainly on the merger. Merging the two companies, obviously, we had a plan. It had already been approved by unions, works councils, what have you. The reduction in headcount was caused by that. The provision we took for the actual reorganization based on the decline in the market hasn't happened yet. On the 18th of August, there's another lawsuit coming to an end. The judge will then rule in our favor is the expectation. Again, it had been delayed and delayed, and it's France, you never know. However, we expect to start the execution of the reorganization plan by the end of Q3, which means in Q4, we should see some of the savings. The 60-day DSO law made a difference, obviously. Another reduction in this quarter, which helps the total DSO, and the opening of the public sector I mentioned already. Germany. Profit improved a bit. Many of you remember that in the past, the first quarter was always loss-making. That has changed even in this difficult market. What we see is that the professional market, the professional company still has a loss, and the staffing company has a very reasonable profit, actually. The average is the 2.2% you've seen. Gulp is the positive exception, by the way, and Yacht Tech.On is the one that still has to improve. Operating expense is 29% lower. An excellent job. Idle time increased for the whole company a bit. However, the penalty, or if you want, the reduction in gross margin is very low single-digit millions. It's still very, very well managed through the company. U.K., late cyclical. As you know, two-thirds of our sales in the U.K. is professionals. We also took provisions in the U.K. to reduce costs. We do expect a considerably better second half of the year. The only thing we have to remember, of course, the Q3 education is low because then students and teachers tend to have holidays, which is a pity because that's a very healthy, very profitable business, but the same every quarter. General staffing, actually, this is the country where general staffing improved the most of all of our markets. Again, since it's only one-third of our sales about, the effect on the total is not big enough to show less decrease than better increase than the -29. We merged the businesses, Hilmerglin and BBT. Would I have announced that a year ago, they probably would have stoned me and everybody would have quit. Now it turned out that it's going to be an excellent marriage because obviously in the same segment, same knowledge, it's going to be an excellent company. Probably market leader in that segment, I guess, Brian. Second. It's going to be market leader in that segment. It's still second now, but we're going to be market leader. EBITDA margin, basically break even. Again, we do expect an improvement in the second half of the year here. North America. Yeah, we actually should divide Canada and the U.S. here. In the past, Canada used to help the U.S. to better numbers. Today, it's the other way around. Canada is a bit worse than the U.S. Also, we see a positive trend, well, an improving trend in general staffing and in-house. But we're still talking worse than minus 30. But we come from a minus 40. So that is a big step in a relatively short period of time. It's based on market. It's also based on the fact that our operations have considerably improved. We have better management. We have quite a number of big client gains. So that actually gives us confidence for the future. As expected, the professional business, being late cyclical, is going down. Still profitable, but still. And in Canada, we see that both are actually in the decline. And it has got a little bit worse through the quarter, Greg, right? Yeah. Gross margin under pressure. As expected, the SUI will increase, especially next year. For most states, it's not a problem, but some states actually have already adapted their rates this year. For us, that's a very small part of our business. But next year, there's going to be more pressure on margin because of SUI, so we have to compensate that. Good DSO management. And EBITDA margin improved from a small loss in Q1 to a small profit in Q2. And there must be more to come. As you know, we're always very keen on market share development. We have not performed according to standard the last couple of quarters. We're still not there, but it's improving. If you look at the list and the main market that's improving is Belgium, obviously, from a minus 4 to minus 1. Which is good, from the US from minus 9 to minus 1. Those are the two most important ones in my view. The Netherlands 1% less. That could shift anyway. Germany improving, so we're slowly getting there, but a bit too slow to my taste. We should gain more market share in a market like this. So we'll try and push for that. Not at the expense of gross margin, which is what you're going to ask me if I don't tell you right now. Looking at industries where there's still growth or where it's worse than average, we listed them for you. The common denominator in almost all markets is the food industry, communications, which is mainly call centers, and business related to government, one way or the other, public administration, healthcare, social work, and in a number of markets we see financial services increasing. In the US, the reason, the main market there is the big number of mortgages that have been renewed. That, of course, causes a lot of administrative work. That's a big market. In Holland, it has been growing for quite a number of quarters already. So we see that market slowly coming back, not at the high end of the market. So our companies like Jocelyn Rowe, which we have in London, that only supplies the city with people, is still... It's still in bad shape, still in a very difficult market, but in other segments it's improving. Now I'd like to hand over to Robert Jan on the financial results and the outlook.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, some financial highlights, which are very much in line with what sort of was the general storyline before. Revenue trends, one addition that is also July, follows the trend that we have seen in June. Gross margin, I have a separate slide that I'll talk you through. Operating expenses from 700 million back to the 531. Quite a magnificent performance. The net debt level up as announced, and that is the typical seasonal pattern in our business. In the second quarter, we always pay out holiday allowances, and that means that takes working capital. As a result of that, the net debt has gone up to 1.5 billion. Leverage ratio comes out at 2.4 times EBITDA, and this compares to the banking arrangements at 3.5 times EBITDA. Then DSO down one day to 58 days. Ben mentioned the French legislation, which is extremely helpful. If one looks at the other markets, one can see that things are getting more difficult. It is clear that clients are pushing for somewhat longer payment terms. At the same time, we constantly are increasing our internal discipline, as you've learned to know us in the previous years, by making sure that we monitor very closely the error rate, the time it takes to invoice, and the collection period, and so forth. And that effort has been stepped up. A gradual increase of doubtful debts, and then analysts always want to know what's gradual. Well, we tend to have between 10 and 20 basis points normally as an addition to the bad debt provision. And you should know that we put into that provision the amounts we deem to be necessary, and on top of that is if a receivable hits the 182 days, which effectively is older than 6 months, it's being provided as well. And of course then at group level we evaluate if that is sufficient. And that amount has now gone up to roughly 25 basis points. That's the direction we're talking about. So that's not a very significant increase. But it is clear that something is changing out there, and we have been prepared for that for quite a while now. The income statement for the second quarter, revenues minus 33, gross profit also down. And I have, as I said, I have a separate slide for this, ending at an EBITDA margin of 2.2%. The lower part of this page is not adjusted for the one-offs and includes the amortization of acquisition-related other intangibles. And as a result, then, you're getting to those numbers. Tax is an addition here. I'll get back to tax separately. Some remarks about the gross margin development in the second quarter of the year. To the left hand, last year, 21%. To the right hand, this quarter of this year, second quarter of this year, 20%, in between two key boxes. One is the temp margin, and we do see increasing pressure on temp margin, still relatively, I would say, limited. There are markets that are doing relatively well. Ben referred to the French market, for example, but across the board we see some pressure. Permanent placement fees, a smaller part of total gross profit, as a result of which the gross margin has come down. Then we have a bigger share relatively of human resource solutions, for example outplacement, which of course in these days is a very relevant business. The relative share of total gross profit has increased, as a result of which you see it here. Idle time is something that we very closely monitor, that we manage very closely across the board. Idle time did not have a relevant impact on the Q2 results. I would say, given the climate that we are in, that's quite a good result. Impact of working days also very limited. So these are the key components here. The development in the number of corporate employees indexed against September 07, when we started to monitor this very closely, December, June, March, and June again here. And as you can see, continued reductions. And then I'd like to point out, because we very often have that discussion, the first way to reduce reduce headcount is by natural attrition. That is something that continues in our business. Normally, natural attrition in our business is between 20 and 25%. And these difficult days, it should normally continue, but at a lower pace. And that's what it does. It's in between 10 and 15% now. And then again, keep in mind that the people, our consultants in the branches, are well-educated, bachelor, master level, either in their first or second job. That is a segment which continues to show liquidity of people. People still flow. And that means there's still an opportunity that if we don't replace the people that leave us, that we can reduce our costs as a result of that. The second component is the integration, which Ben mentioned, and I have a separate slide on, which has been going very well and very rapidly. That contributes a significant reduction of cost. And then the third category is our reorganizations. And we always discuss with our operations that we see this as an investment. If you put money into a reorganization, we'd like to see the return within 12 months. Following this slide, this one fits to it. It's referring to the unit steering model, as we have discussed it with you many times. Three lines here, the number of corporate employees, number of outlets, and the revenue curve. It's very difficult to keep up with revenue decline as steep as we see it here. Adjusting the organization is something as we have practiced in 2006. We've discussed it with you at the time. Well prepared, and I think the results are excellent, but the steep decline that we have seen was impossible to exactly keep up with, but I would say overall very, very good results, reducing the number of outlets and the number of corporate employees following the curve in revenues. At the bottom, it makes a relevant remark here. Increased footprint allows us to do this kind of rationalization, whereas in the old days, we didn't have that many opportunities To merge branches, for example, in the French market today, that's a completely different story, just as one example. Group productivity development. After difficult days, we generally also see better times, and one better be prepared for that. And this is an indication of this. Rather than following gross profit per head, which we do intensively, but if you look at it across a longer period of time, then inflation gets into the game. For this reason, we have now taken the corporate FTEs and then relative employees working. So how many flex workers does each and every corporate employee at Randstad employ? And that ratio we have plotted here, going back to 1998. In the meantime, things have changed. For example, we have much more fee business than we used to have in the old days. We've not eliminated that. This is just the plain picture. And as you can see here, it's clear indication that we do have some 30% of overcapacity, which is available to deal with opportunities. And that's significant, and of course it's not always in the right location, but then we'll move it around. There's a substantial investment that we continue to have in our system in order to be able to pick up. The restructuring charges, we've had a few quarters now of restructuring charges, Q4, Q1 and Q2. In total, a bit more than 90 million. We have announced that we expect limited restructuring charges for Q3. That does not mean that we'll stop reducing costs, because I already referred to the natural attrition. And the savings are listed at the bottom, and at the very bottom line, you can see them on an annualized basis. The fact that we have put more than 90 million in the reorganization provision, and that we're now looking at savings of 60 million on an annualized basis in the third quarter means there's still some 30 million in the pipeline. Most of that is the French reorganization, which Ben explained. At the bottom here, it says that the earn back on restructuring charges is 12 months. That should say maximum 12 months. It should be earned back within 12 months. Some remarks about the cash flow statement. The storyline is more or less explained by the holiday allowances, which came in as a specific seasonal issue in Q2. Some remarks on investments, CapEx, as you can see here, additions of PPE, property plants and equipment, and software together is 11 million, and that compares to more last year. Across the board, if you look at depreciation, that's close to 100 million on an annualized basis. This confirms the trend that for the full year CapEx should not be higher than 50 million. Let me see if there's anything else here. Well, that debt change was the result of what you have seen, what you have seen in our cash flow. Final time that we show you the update on tracking synergies for the group. Also, Ben mentioned most of it. We have now the 40 million and the 100 million. And this compares to originally 20 million tax savings and originally 80 million of cost savings. As you can see here, also on the integration cost side, both non-cash and cash, we also stayed within the budget. I would say that's quite a remarkable job done in the past, because these plans were prepared late 2007. And as you can see now, we are pretty close to the numbers that were estimated at the time. A favorite issue, tax issues at Randstad. First of all, due to the decision of the government, 80 million of positive cash flow will be the result of delayed payment of Dutch VAT. By the way, just making a sidestep, we are also promoting to the government to even expand this into wage taxes. We do no more than promoting it. We have no impact on this at all. We have no idea what the status of affairs is. But it is to the Dutch government, it is a way to reach out to the corporates in the Netherlands, not going through the banks, but sort of outside the banks, to reach out and provide liquidity. And that, from a receivables management standpoint, is also relevant to us. There's a tax refund of 150 million in Q3, and this is where the tax whiz kits have been sitting together. We had identified this point. We've come to a conclusion with the Dutch tax authorities, and it does have a very specific relationship with the valuation of foreign subsidiaries in our tax accounts. As you can see in the second line, there is a deduction now, but in the future there will be an addition, and it's very much depending on whether or not sort of buttons are being switched on or off. And that is not completely in our control, by no means, and for that reason the 150 million is a cash benefit, and it will be placed in the deferred tax liabilities in order to be able to pay it back in 2012. But in these difficult days, it is something you can imagine we've been working hard on to organize now. The effective tax rate in the P&L is a difficult one, and it fluctuates more than it does normally. And that is due to a couple of items which are listed here, and I'll take you through them. A relatively low level of profitability. That means that, for example, the synergies, the 40 million, which I can assure you is clearly coming through, that the 40 million is having a relatively big impact on the profitability of the group. I mean, that's life these days with low levels of profitability. Then, operational and tax losses in several countries with different rates. The mix is very much determined by that. And if one makes a tax loss in a country with a relatively high rate, that has an impact, as you can imagine. And then we have a relatively high impact of tax on amortization, and this is where it gets into bookkeeping. The amortization of other intangibles. When it was put aside, what happened effectively was we have this pile of goodwill, and then according to IFRS you have to define the share that relates to the value of the databases and the brands. And that money was then placed aside. But in order to make sure that in the P&L this does not come up, this depreciation, because we depreciated in 7 years. This depreciation should not show without an adjustment for the tax pressure. So at the time when we reduced goodwill and took the money out and placed it under other intangibles, we also took a provision for tax into account. That is standard rules, regulations, and that means that, you know, it's kind of a virtual tax pressure on the amortization, and that means that this virtual tax pressure landed in a provision and comes back in 7 parts every year. It comes back into the P&L and it reduces the pressure from the amortization by a virtual tax adjustment of 31%. It was the tax rate that we used to have as a group at the time that we set aside the money for the other intangibles. And then the final point is a revaluation of the provision on deferred tax assets. Well, Randstad has in its books quite some net operating losses, and these net operating losses have a value. And it is clear that when the outlook is high, is good, there's a higher value, there's a higher probability to be able to offset those than when the business is in a more difficult climate. And the revaluation, which is the result of again and again looking at the probability of making up for those losses, is something that has an impact on the quarterly results. And that is an assessment we have been making this time again. And as you can imagine, we are less optimistic because the starting point of the scenarios is lower than it was last time. And that results in a lower value of those net operating losses. And I mean, this is logical, but at the same time, I'm not sure that this is the way to explain it to the investment community. IFRS seems to leave very, very little room, almost no room, to maneuver here. This is the theory behind it, and that's the way it should work out. All in all, this results in guidance for 2009, which is a 31% continued tax rate on the amortization of other intangibles, the databases, the brands, and a 15 to 70% effective tax rate on the profit before tax, pre-amortization, and even higher, 20 to 22, when it's before the one-offs, because the one-offs are sort of have been planned in countries, have been reported in countries with a relatively higher tax pressure. That's what's making the difference. Well, we have worked this all out in an example, and rather than confusing you with our own scenarios, we took the analyst consensus as an assumption. We have no opinion on this, but we just took it as an assumption. And then we took the consensus EBITA, as you can see at the top end, and then worked our way down. On the right hand, we have two columns, the tax rate 16% and the tax rate 31%. On the very much on the right hand, tax rate 31%, it's only the amortization of other intangibles. In the column tax rate 16%, it's the three components I mentioned to you in the previous slide. So the mix in the tax rate, the synergies, the impact of synergies, and the revaluation of the tax deferred tax assets. That's all coming together here. And then on the left hand, of course, the consensus. 316 EBITA, integration cost and one-offs in total 68, that adds up, that deducts to 248 million. That's the base for the 16%. And then we get the amortization, which is calculated against the 31%. That's why it's on the right-hand side. The 248 is reduced by the financial charges, and then we have a result of 188. And on that, we have the 16% tax rate, calculating 30 million minus. The tax rate on the amortization is 31%, and that results in 49 million. And the net between the 49 and the 13 is the 19 million, in this case 66%. That's what we have tried to explain you here. We still realize it's complex, but we thought that full transparency will help you to understand this. At the very bottom of the page, you see that we have taken numbers without adjusting those for the one-offs, and that is why the rate over here is 5% higher than the rate over there. That's the only reason. I'm sure you'll have some questions about it, and we're available for that also later on. A few remarks about the financing of Randstad. You've seen this slide before. We are now at a leverage ratio of 2.4. If the current level of revenues continues through the year, which we have no clue of if it will, but if that is the scenario, then you'll see our ratio staying at a very comfortable level. The redemptions that are shown here, the 135 million, given the fact that we have a 2.7 billion facility and that the gross net debt, sorry, the gross debt is around 2 billion, it means that until 2012 we'll have no issue here because we'll simply reduce the facility step by step. So from a liquidity standpoint, no point at all, no refinancing for before 2013, and we would want to say, given the difficult climate, we believe that the financing holds up very well. The outlook for the next quarter, as I said, we do see the trend from June moving into July, but it is very difficult to forecast a trend in a holiday season. It's the month of September will give more to hold on to. Pricing remains somewhat under pressure. We constantly and will continue to align the cost base. The French reorganization is expected to have an impact late Q3. We have no year-on-year working day impact in the third quarter. We also expect limited reorganization charges. And the net debt, as a result of all of this, is expected to be 200 million lower than at the end of Q2. And the reason why we have stated the 200 million is we have the 150 from the government, we have the 80 from taxes. Then we have somewhat higher sales, somewhat higher revenue level in Q3 to compare to Q2. If we would see a continued flat scenario, if we would see that, and that means it eats some working capital. And then if you look at the operational cash flow with the revenue levels that we have now, that is very, very limited. So all in all, that's why we have indicated the 200 million reduction of net debt for the next quarter. This is a summary of what we have been discussing with you. And then we'll move to Q&A.
Yeah, we'll start our Q&A from here. We'll start here in the room with Mark.
Oh, okay. It's Mark from RBS. Two questions. Robert-Jan, can you just repeat what you just said? Assuming that the current revenue decline will continue for the rest of the year, you expect to be comfortably below your covenant of 3.5?
That's correct. So okay. If we continue to see the 3 billion level, which is a scenario, then we believe that that is the result, yes.
Okay. And then looking at the EBITA of 67 million, what can you say about the breakdown over the 3 months? Basically, what percentage of the EBITA is achieved in which month?
Well, I'd like to sort of limit my response to saying that June is the most relevant month in this.
Always, every year.
Okay.
And that clearly has to do with the bank holidays. Huh?
Yeah, sorry. It's Mark Hartsenburg, ING. Robert-Jan, quickly on the tax rate. A lot of stories and examples, but could you give us an indication for the cash flow taxes for this year, and maybe to make it even simpler, what is the effective tax rate for 2010, roughly?
Yeah, Mark, we've been thinking about it, and it's a very difficult one because, as you can see, the mix makes a hell of a difference. So I can't give you a solid indication, a good indication at this point in time. In terms of the cash tax, the first half of the year was 40 million out, and I believe that the second half of the year will be less than that.
Sorry, how much?
Will be less tax out in the second half of the year than we had in the first half of the year.
Okay, maybe a ballpark figure for the tax rate for next year, maybe in the 5 percentage points range. Is that possible?
No, it's too difficult. The impact of low results and synergies, one-offs, is way too big for that. I'm sorry.
Maybe to add to that, I mean, what we discussed this morning, what you're going to see is that if the climate remains the same, you know, if nothing changes, you shouldn't see the 20 to 30 million that we mentioned in the press release on the revaluation. So, I mean, that would drive the 22% rate down. But then if you see a mix change and more profits in France because of restructuring, et cetera, I mean, then the rate will go up again. So yeah, it depends on what kind of scenario you take.
Okay. And then one on cost synergies. You mentioned that you're done with the Vedio synergies, but you're streamlining currently the professional business. Any indication how much cost savings will come out of that restructuring, streamlining?
Yeah, that will be in the category limited amounts. What we have included in Q2 and Q3, and we might include some in the future. It will be in that category, relatively limited, small steps.
Thanks very much.
Arun Bogus Kempen, two questions. First of all, is on slide 26, so you do accept the fact that you have a 30% overcapacity in your organization, but what does the unit steering model tells you at this moment? Should you scale back more, and are you willing to do so? That's the first question. Secondly, is on the cost savings we can expect next to the savings in France. How much volume-related cost savings are still in the pipeline? And what will be a scenario where you plan to go for additional cost savings if volume trends remain as they are? That's it. Those are two questions, right?
Yeah, I'll start with the first one. Yeah, sort of. two categories anyhow. On the cost savings, again, it's unit steering. So we do not determine in advance how much cost we're going to save. We look at the actuals and we adapt cost to the actuals. That's linked to overcapacity because obviously what we present here is the ideal world. By the way, I think the overcapacity is a bit higher because we have a lot more people than in the past that are actually only generate fees and do not have employees working. Well, we included those in the calculation. So if you are in permanent placement, you will not have an employee working. Obviously, you'll only have fees. So would we look at gross profit? Then the picture again is being disturbed by inflation. So that's why we chose this imperfect way of doing it. I think the overcapacity is more. Next item on how do you manage and how much do you allow your overcapacity to be? That also has to do with the fact that we don't have ideal distribution, obviously. We sometimes have overcapacity, more overcapacity than we'd like in an area where we're still going down. And we might have a little, too little capacity, an area we're going up. Because the key question in the end is what do you do with your distribution? Do you actually leave markets or not? As we also mentioned in the press release and many times before, we do not like to leave markets. So in some markets, we will accept productivity levels below the normal threshold, which would allow, in order to maintain our presence. Obviously, this is more the case in markets where we had a bigger decline for a longer period of time, whereas in markets such as the Netherlands, there's still a lot more room to maneuver without having to leave markets. Would we have a catastrophic scenario where the market would decline a lot more, we reduce cost more? We can always do that. But it's not a planned activity, it's based again on the unit steering.
The question was on how much volume-related cost savings there are still in the pipeline next to the 30 million you plan to achieve in France. Do you have a figure for that?
Nope.
Okay.
The guidance was 520 in Q3, and that should be it. Huh?
Yeah. Dante Ewes, Fortis. Question on your growth rates. You see a stabilization now, but how do you assess the risk of a new decline? Can you, for example, say what plans are doing for the summer holidays? Will they be closed longer than last year or shorter? Do you have any indication of that?
Visibility is short. What we do see is that, for example, in Belgium, we usually have quite a number of student projects, which, by the way, also pull our margin down, but that's a different story. And we see that there are considerably less of those. We see it in all markets that more plants will probably close down or are able to maintain production with their fixed employees. I don't have a number against it yet, no.
And second question, given the 150 million coming in, do you expect that you will be paying out dividends again?
Well, we'd love to, but we've also indicated the conditions.
The answer is yes, we don't know when.
And the condition is that we should be between 0 and 2 times EBITDA. We've stated that in the annual report for many years. That is sort of our comfort zone. We're not there yet. And so when we return to those levels, we will immediately try to get back to paying dividends again.
Right. Thanks.
Frank van Wijk, SNS Securities. Two questions, please. Maybe rephrasing Arun's question, but what does worry you most at this moment? Cutting costs too deep or cutting costs too little?
Yeah, neither, eh? Again, we consciously, because we have built a system where we decide more or less locally what should happen. However, as soon as you get into two areas, three areas actually, and you get into management, then there's no automatic system, if you want, that takes management involvement. If you get into infrastructure, that takes management involvement. If we want to close down branches, so we look at all these separate operations. Weekly, but for sure monthly, look at the position, and if we feel that we would have to leave strategic positions, areas, by closing down a branch, then we would not do it. But we look at it case by case, always. So we balance these things in light of the environment. So that's why I have to say it's balanced, because if not, then I would have taken decisions against our own common sense. That would be strange, right?
A second question.
And I'm not the worrying type by nature. That's the other thing I should mention, of course. Yeah.
Second question about price pressure. Can you elaborate some more on that? What trends do you see in the different countries?
Yeah, per country maybe a bit much, but for sure what we do see that in a number of quite a number of instances, existing contracts are being renegotiated, and we hardly ever see any clients that want to pay more. So that has an effect. It's big contracts we're talking about in general. Given the volume development so far, also if you look at history, I'd say that the market has been pretty disciplined so far. There's always one or two odd players in a market, very often medium-sized or small ones that are unreasonably aggressive because they want to survive. But that has been the case before. It's a bit worse now. So that's why we see some pressure on margin. And as I said before, the longer the low volumes will remain with us, the more pressure we get on price. In the past, what we saw, of course, is that usually when the pressure really started to hurt a bit, then volume started to recover. I can't forecast if that's going to happen this time too. And the other thing clients want is Robert Jan's favorite subject. They want to have longer DSOs, and we don't want them to have longer DSOs. So that's why we are negotiating. We have given in a little bit, as you have seen, because on balance, the benefit of, for example, France is a bit bigger than the one day we have gained. But I think so far we've been able to balance these things pretty good.
I'm into shorter DSOs.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, the topic is your favorite, but not direction. Yeah.
We'll take a question from Aruni from the room, and after that we'll switch to the telephone lines.
Okay, yeah. Two additional questions.
What do you see in terms of contract duration and renewal rate? Do you see already some signs of stabilization on that side or maybe an improvement? And furthermore, when you see a stabilization in a year-on-year trend, you always sort of ignore the seasonality. Do you already see some improvement in the seasonality? For example, a company like TNT recently responded that July saw an above-average seasonality in their express business. Is it something which you recognize as a cyclical company as well? Thanks.
I'll take your second question first, and I'm doing that because I was asked the same question. This was responding to two-week changes. That's not what we do at Randstad. We really look at it for a longer period of time before we react to it, because we very often see differences in weeks, and that is really confusing to discuss that with the outside community. The point we made is so far that July behaves like June, taking into account the regular seasonal pattern.
Contract duration, I don't see big changes at the moment.
Operator, can we get some questions from the telephone lines?
Thank you. We'll take our first question from the telephone from Jamie Brandwood from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi there. I'll limit it to two questions. Firstly, could you talk a little bit more about your performance in the Netherlands, particularly in terms of your EBIT margin? I was at least quite surprised by the strong quarter-on-quarter increase in EBIT margin. Wondered if you could maybe give some details on what happened to SG&A in the Netherlands year-on-year in the quarter, or anything else that drove that impressive EBIT margin performance. And then the second question is more around gross margin at the group level. You've talked about pricing pressure. You've talked about SUI in the US. You've talked about permanent recruitment, et cetera. How are you feeling about gross margin pressure as we move into the second half? And how are you feeling about gross margins, you know, more generally? How much do you think they could come down, I guess?
Yeah, we were not too surprised about the EBIT margin in Holland. We've always stated that Holland has always been a very loyal and dependent contributor to profit. So that's not a surprise. We have an excellent mix in industries. A big part, for example, of the Tempo Team revenue, and also a big part, but percentage-wise smaller, of Randstad is in government contracts, to give you an example. Yacht has been performing well. We reduced idle time. We took a charge for that, as you might remember, in Q1. And that also, of course, resulted again in a very decent profit. Costs have been brought in line with market developments. First of all, we have excellent companies with good management that are very close to market, close to react. They also have had some more time to react because the decline has come a bit later and in a smaller percentage. But still, in our position in this market means that we are involved in basically any contract negotiations. So we can, to a large extent, choose what we want to do and look at whether or not we think contracts are profitable or not. And to adapt cost, that's the same story as Rob John referred to earlier in France. That, as you all know, the bigger the density of business, the more branches you have, the more people in a small geographical area, the easier it is to adapt costs. And again, would the market deteriorate more in Holland, I'm very confident we could take out more costs.
Was Dutch SG&A then, you said you've matched the revenue development, was Dutch SG&A down roughly 23% year over year in the quarter?
Yeah, if you take an assumption on the margin, relatively margin development, then you're better than I am in doing the maths what happened to SG&A.
Okay. And then group gross margins, and you know whether from this 20% level that you've delivered in Q2, we perhaps should anticipate more pressure, or whether you think that actually 20% is a reasonable level to stay at.
Yeah,
Before doing that, I have one addition to the cost reductions in the group. The fact that we have been using our own services is also very helpful. And in the Netherlands, there was a relatively high level of awareness that we should organize with flexible layers in our organization. That helped us enormously when we went through the integration, especially in the back office, where normally the flexibility is low because staff turnover rates are lower as well. But the fact that we had taken our own medicine, organized a lot of flexibility, helped us and continues to help us a lot with adjusting the organization. Gross margin, you know, it's very dangerous to focus on this too much. Ben already made the reference. If we have 16% gross margin in our in-house business, we could have a wonderful company.
Let me
just give you sort of one dimension of this. Normally, when we get through this cycle and the signs that we see today are typical for a phase in a cycle from where you'll see improvements. Whether that will happen, no guarantees at all. But if it happens, it's generally the blue collar, the light industrial and the logistical segment that starts to improve first.
Absolutely,
That normally comes in with relatively low gross margins. But it is served also with a different business model if it's served through our in-house business. And, you know, in the end, it's...
Yeah, what matters is the conversion ratio. I accept that, yeah.
And in the end, it's about euros and not percentages. So we're very much looking for low margin, gross margin business in this context. And then in order to complete the answer, you really have to look at each and every line within the gross margin. And I'll do that very quickly. Ben already made the point on the SUI charges, the unemployment charges in the US, the permanent placement business, which is stable, but at a sort of at a larger decline than the rest of the business. Pricing, Ben referred to that, and that is really something we monitor closely. Idle time is an element in gross margin, and the impact in Q2 was marginal. And you know, if you look at the way we've been managing it, especially in our German business, then I think this is the foundation to continue a good job in this field as well. So you really have to evaluate each and every element specifically.
So you think your perm revenue now is also pretty stable in terms of, you know, June versus May, etc.
The rate of decline has been stable right through the quarter. I mean, it was
in term, yeah?
Yeah, minus 56 in all 3 months.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have two further questions from the telephone. We'll take our next question from Toby Reeks from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi there. I've got two questions, if I can, both on France. Could you give us some colour on the change in the public sector employment reform and just sort of when you think that will start to have an impact on your revenues and how dramatic that will be? And then secondly, you talked about the gross margin performing well in some countries, and you mentioned France, I think, as being one of those. Could you talk about which countries have performed well and which has performed badly? Thanks.
Yeah, I don't remember mentioning the gross margin specifically in any country, but okay. On the public sector, what we now need are, let's say, some rules of engagement, I think. There's a nice French word for it, which I forgot. They have to be published, and then we know exactly how and when and where. That's the first step. Obviously, a new market opening up takes time to develop, because we have to still convince the players in the market, the decision makers, that they should have a more that they should have a different view on how to handle their needs in the HR arena. That'll take time. Next to that, you have institutions, not works councils like that, who also play a role. So that's why we are not too bullish on a short term effect. It'll take time. However, in time, it has to be big, because if I remember well, it's over 20% of the working population that works for the government in France. So if you would only have a 1 or 2% penetration there, that already would mean huge numbers. But we are not, we don't want to be too optimistic here, because again, it'll take quite some time before it'll start. But then the impact should be big. If we talk 20% of the market, that's what it should be.
But are you sort of thinking this is going to be sort of a year or two before we actually start seeing some sort of material revenue benefit, or Now, is that the sort of time frame you're thinking about, or do you think it could be more or less?
Could well be. What you usually see, of course, in any new development, it starts slow and then suddenly it takes off at the moment you don't expect it. The exact time frame is difficult to specify now.
Okay.
But it'll take time, yeah.
Shall I do the one on the gross margin across the board? We've changed our disclosure to EBITDA per country, and that means we have separated ways in terms of showing the gross margin per country. What I can tell you, there's no significant, very significant changes across the board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our last question from Tom Sykes, Deutsche Bank, London. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. Just wanted to ask one question on the impact of short-time working and how you saw this may affect the current level of low volumes or in a recovery, that obviously the sort of full-time equivalent sort of grossed up man hours of those on short-time working is quite significant and quite high compared to sort of 2002-2003. I wondered if you could just give your thoughts on how that might affect a recovery and what benefit it has actually given you in some areas where you're perhaps using it yourself.
Yeah, indeed, there's two aspects. We use it ourselves in Belgium, in Germany, which helps, because by doing that we can maintain key people in the company at a lower cost. That helps. In the market in general, what I think, but it's a bit daring maybe, but anyhow, after and during every crisis you get these fantastic theories everywhere. I remember in the last one that we saw the jobless recovery. First of all, we would never have a crisis again, of course, which we had, and then we had a jobless recovery, which doesn't exist either. I think this is going to be a part of the visibility of the jobless recovery, because obviously a jobless recovery doesn't exist. But now we'll see, because now we'll see that the part-time unemployment will disappear, and that will be the visible part of the jobless recovery, I think. And then we'll have a recovery where jobs will be growing again. So it might cause a slow delay. If you look at the total numbers, I think it's almost neglectable. So I'm not too worried about the effect of that on our growth in the future, and we use it wholeheartedly in the countries where we can.
Okay, and have you got any feeling for sort of what that length of delay might be? I mean, are we talking kind of, you know, a quarter, or it's a bit longer? I mean, I accept the fact that there's going to be some substitution because people want flexibility, even if there are people on short time working.
I think it's going to be very short, Tom. I think the impact is going to be very small.
And thank you. And maybe if you could just talk, I know you've given an awful lot of comments on gross margins already on the call, but whether it's possible to sort of stay by kind of business line, sort of staffing, in-house, professional, maybe if you could give some comments on the gross margin pressure or not that you're seeing by dividing it by those different lines, please.
Yeah, the pressure is biggest in the professional segment, also, or mainly actually, because of the permanent placement fees that have disappeared. We have a number of organizations that were even up to 40 or 50% depending on permanent placements, and obviously they are suffering. So that's where we see the biggest impact on total. That's also, by the way, the market that will recover easiest, because that segment is least exposed to contracts where they have fixed margins.
Yeah. So just looking at the temp gross margin.
Yeah, but I thought this one was also interesting, Tom. No.
It's very interesting.
We're number two in the world in the professional market, so I want to talk about that. You have to give me time to show off too. Huh? at in-house, of course, that's all big contracts, but low volumes today. But relatively low volumes, because that's where we had the biggest decline. Robert John wants to confuse me now, and he always managed to do that. Those are big contracts with big companies. We have seen some pressure there. The effect on that operation is limited. We still see a lot of potential in moving clients from the branches to in-house, where actually we also moved clients back to the branches, and we will reverse that operation the moment the market picks up. So I'm not too worried about the margin pressure there. I think the relative biggest pressure is in the general staffing, where also in some markets, again, permanent placement fees do play a role. But still there, if you look at our, we shared it before, I think global contracts is something like below 15% of our revenues. So yeah, the impact is still limited if you look at the total mix.
And I know we ought to be looking at the longer term, but just on the very short term, I suppose you've made some comments that there might be some, or that there should be some seasonality for you. But it does seem like from your comments on kind of in-house that perhaps some of the areas where you might see the greatest seasonality in volumes and maybe also where there might be some higher gross margin pressure as well. Do you think at the moment that you might be able to see improving gross profit quarter on quarter in Q3?
Improving is not what I would expect. Normally Q3 has a slightly lower gross margin on average.
Or in absolute terms, I suppose.
In absolute terms, then I'd be forecasting also revenues. So that gets a bit tricky.
Okay.
If the market is stable, it's obvious, and we would even maintain our cost, we would generate more gross profit in Q3 than in Q2. That would mean a bigger EBITDA. That's common sense. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we have one further question from the audio. We have... he appears disconnected. We have no further questions from the audio at this time.
Okay.
Okay, as we have no further questions on the lines, no further questions in the room, we conclude this presentation. Thanks all for being here, and we'll see you in 6 months' time. Thanks.
Toi, tu peux compter sur moi. Et comme la première fois, souviens-toi, redis-moi. Heureux de vous connaître.